join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 66 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 50s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Prevention, and I'm your reader, Adrienne Booker, with the audio reading service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine's April 2021 issue. And now, I'll begin with an article in Prevention Science section entitled, Can You Really Boost Your Brain? When it comes to making your synapses snappier and your neural connections stronger, there are specific proven steps that can help. Here's what the latest research says about maximizing your memory, sharpening your focus, and more. For anyone who's had to search their mind for a word or a detail, all of us, it may be a surprise to hear that according to brain health experts, memory isn't everything. So why is it the first or only thing we worry about? People don't really care about performing better on some mental test, says Gary Small, MD, Chair of Psychiatry at Hackensack University Medical Center, Behavioral Health Physician in Chief at Hackensack Meridian Health, and the author of the Memory Bible. They want to remember their grocery list. When they're walking down the street and see someone they know, they want to remember that person's name so they don't have to say, hi, how are you doing? And can say, hi, Mary, how are you doing? But memory is much more complicated than plucking a name from your brain or knowing you're running low on milk. Recalling a friend's name, for example, is also tied to your brain's processing speed, your ability to focus, and a host of other factors you can improve. But you'll have to put in some effort. In general, people have unrealistic expectations around memory, says Sherry D. All, Ph.D., owner and director of the Chicago Center for Cognitive Wellness and author of the upcoming book, The Neuroscience of Memory. And, as she points out, it's not all about age. People over 40 forget that they forgot things when they were in their 20s, too. A fair amount of misinformation is out there that can make you feel bad about your brain. For instance, your brain doesn't stop growing as soon as the ink on your diploma is dry, as you might have heard. A reassuring scientific concept called neuroplasticity means your brain has the ability to modify its structure and function throughout your life. New cells can be produced in our brains even when you're considered to be in old age. This means that if you're wishing you can make your brain stronger, you absolutely can. We can boost your IQ, but with brain training, you can improve your concentration, expand your working memory, and more, explains All. What brain training is all about? When it comes to the field of cognitive rehabilitation, which usually addresses people who have had a stroke or a brain injury, there are two types of strategies used to improve cognitive skills, compensatory and restorative, and they can work for the rest of us as well. Compensatory strategies are workarounds that help you complete tasks, the way a crutch might help you walk if you had a broken leg. Think of that song you sang to memorize the presidents, or how you visualized a hydrant with a balloon tied to it to help you remember that the periodic table starts with hydrogen and helium. It's making a habit of always putting your car keys on a hook by the door, or when meeting a new person, repeating their name to solidify the memory. Compensatory strategies make up the majority of what you can do to build up your brain. but a small number of cognitive rehab strategies are restorative, meaning they're actually repairing or improving brain function. Think about, for example, how a person who's had a stroke may have to relearn to walk or speak. And then there are other brain health behaviors you can adopt, like getting enough sleep and eating well to focus your memory, improve your recall and comprehension, and more, says all. What should you expect when you're expecting to make brain gains? What's realistic depends on what people are willing to do, says Dr. Small. Brain training isn't all fun and games, although admittedly, some of it is. To some degree, just as with diet and exercise, you get out of it what you put into it. But it's important to note that what happens in a lab doesn't always translate to the outside world. Usually, activities in scientific studies are not the same as what people actually do from day to day, says Dr. Small. Perhaps you're not able to spend 3 months on a meditation retreat, for example. Regardless, experts told us that the following strategies not only are worth your time and energy, but also have been shown to improve the way people process, focus on, store, and recall information. See how many mind-modifying habits you can regularly work into your life. Number one, commit to moving your body. There's no debate. Working out does a body and a brain good. We have really strong evidence that exercise can help you grow more brain cells, increase the number of connections and pathways in your brain, and create more nerve growth factors, which are like Miracle-Gro for your brain cells, says all. While there's no one specific type of workout that all experts recommend, studies have looked at the brain-building benefits of everything from hopping on a bike to getting into bird pose. One small study showed that high-intensity interval training in adults 60 and older, for example, resulted in an increase of up to 30% in memory performance. The research, published in Applied Physiology, Nutrition, and Metabolism, focused on high-interference memory, which helps you do things like distinguish one car from another that's the same make and model. A scientific review from the University of Illinois used MRI images to demonstrate one benefit of yoga. Regular yoga practice brought about increased volume in the hippocampus, a part of the brain involved in memory, and a larger prefrontal cortex, which is essential to planning. Bottom line, pick a fitness path you enjoy and stay on it. Number two, challenge yourself to learn new things. You may have heard this and thought it meant you had to learn to play the guitar or download Duolingo and take up Mandarin. Sure, those things would definitely sharpen your brain. Learning a new language boosts your gray matter, which is tied to memory and attention, for example. But you might give up by the third lesson if you're overwhelmed. The idea is to train your brain, not strain your brain, says Dr. Small, about whatever brain-building activity you choose to engage in. Each of us needs to find that entry point so the new activities we choose are engaging and we're motivated to do better at them. That might mean bringing novelty and variety into your favorite activity by, say, switching out your daily crossword for a Sudoku puzzle a few days a week. If you like painting, try a freehand drawing class. You're easing yourself into something new by building on something you enjoy. Introducing a challenge helps your brain create new pathways instead of repeatedly activating the old ones, experts say. If you're committed to working on any kind of mental task, you'll get better and faster at it over time, says Dr. Small, who used to get stuck on the New York Times crossword puzzle, which gets harder each day of the week, by Tuesday, but now makes it to Thursday. We all have the capacity to improve. It's a matter of practice, he says. Number three, do something meditative and mindful. You'll never remember the name of the person you just met or the five things your partner asked you to buy from the store if you can't focus on those things. Thankfully, a 7,000-year-old practice can help sharpen your attention in less time than you probably spend looking for something you've misplaced, Research has shown that even brief bouts of mindfulness meditation can have instant benefits. In one small study, novices to the practice spent 10 minutes listening to an audio-guided mindfulness meditation and saw an immediate increase in their attention, accuracy, and reaction times in a task performed afterward, compared with the control group. Another long-term study from the University of California, Davis, Center for Mind and Brain, looked at the impact of a 3-month meditation retreat on a group of 60 experienced practitioners. Few of us have that kind of time, but interestingly, some of the gains in attention the participants achieved immediately after the retreat stayed with them 7 years later, though they had reduced their practice to about an hour a day. Focus is a good place to, well, focus your brain-building desires. Attention is definitely the most malleable of all the cognitive domains, from what we've been able to see or prove, says all. Meditation is a good strategy for strengthening your brain, even if you're just focusing on your breath during those minutes. When people meditate, over the course of weeks, their hippocampus grows, their prefrontal cortex increases in volume, and their fear detector, the amygdala, likely shrinks. That last part is key, because you can't focus when you're in a state of panic or stress. Cortisol is toxic to brain cells, says all. You can't get rid of all your stress, but you can let meditation help you get out of fight or flight mode. Number 4, get more social. Once we've moved beyond the financial and physical impact of the pandemic, the longest lasting negative consequence will be its mental health impact, says Adam Gazzaley, MD, PhD, the founder and executive director of Neuroscape, a neuroscience center at the University of California at San Francisco that's focused on the intersection of technology and brain health. He notes that isolation is not good for brain health. The data is quite convincing that isolation can impact not only how long you live, but also how well you live. He says we need to find ways to regularly stay in touch with family and friends, even during this pandemic. That means upping your Zoom game, watching movies online together, or heading out on more socially distanced walks. It's not just that isolation brings greater risk of cognitive decline. Socializing is very good for your brain because it's another way to learn new things. When you're having conversations with other people, you're working your brain, says Dr. Small. Just 10 minutes of conversation, not debate, can increase executive functioning skills like working memory and the ability to suppress distractions, says a study in social, psychological, and personality science. Number 5, try playing games. Brain training games are a multi-billion-dollar industry that has skyrocketed in the past year, thanks to the pandemic-spurred need for e-learning. If you've ever wondered whether the apps you see advertised on your Facebook feed are worth it, know that the answer is a solid maybe. The first things to know is that not all brain games are created equal. There are good games and bad games, says Dr. Gazzaley, whose lab has been developing and testing video game technology to enhance brain health for over a decade. So do games help or hurt? Isn't a good question. The devil is in the details. Also, different games have different brain game goals. Some are slow and strategic with the aim of enhancing your thinking skills, while others are action-packed with the aim of speeding up your processing. The challenge is that a lot of data is mixed right now, says Dr. Gazzaley, who is working to understand how the enhanced attention abilities achieved in a game can affect day-to-day life. As it stands now, there isn't a ton of definitive research on the benefits of commercially available brain games, but the likelihood of their hurting you is low, and it's possible that they will help. So do a little research on their claims before you buy, and then if you're interested, give them a go. It may seem overwhelming to adopt all these new behaviors, but one key to bringing ease to the process? Look at it less as a chore than as pure fun. Whether it's going for a bike ride or finding 10 minutes to meditate and de-stress, let the brain-boosting elements of all these habits be the icing on your cerebral cake. I'll now read an article from Prevention's science section entitled Insights, How Solving Climate Change Will Help Your Health by Merrill Davids Landau. There's a lot of buzz about urgent steps environmental experts are advocating to rescue the planet for future generations. Perhaps less talked about is how these initiatives will affect human health right now and in the coming years. Here's what three much-discussed moves designed to create a greener future means for your well-being and that of your family. The climate solution. Switching to electric vehicles. The cars, trucks, buses, ships, trains, and planes we used to get from point A to point B generate the most greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. Significant changes in this area will help drive huge improvements in the quality of our atmosphere. Good for the environment. The nitrogen dioxide, NO2, that flows from the tailpipes of our vehicles reacts with other chemicals in the air to form particulate matter and ozone, a powerful heat-trapping gas. Fortunately, cars, trucks, and buses that are electric don't release nitrogen dioxide. So putting more of them on the road and using far fewer gas guzzlers will lower ground-level ozone over time. Less ozone in the atmosphere may result in a sky so clear you can see for miles. Good for your health. Breathing air with all that nitrogen dioxide may mean less coughing, wheezing, breathing trouble, respiratory infections, and asthma, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. If even a quarter of a metro area's vehicles were converted to electric, 30 to 50 premature deaths a year would be prevented there, Canadian researchers calculate. Retiring old buses, diesel trucks, and inefficient motorcycles is especially beneficial for reducing nitrogen dioxide and diesel-related particulate matter, says John Balbus, MD, a senior advisor for public health at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Switching to plug-in cars, or better yet, biking and walking when we can, will also help a lot. The climate solution, expanding wind and solar power. Today, most energy in the U.S. comes from burning fossil fuels, mainly coal and natural gas. The former is known as a dirty fuel because of its high carbon content and the fact that burning it to make power belches toxins into the air. Fortunately, there are many renewable energy alternatives, including wind, solar, hydropower, and biomass. Good for the environment. Burning coal and natural gas creates carbon dioxide and methane, heat-trapping gases that are amongst the biggest culprits in raising temperatures around the globe. One reason carbon dioxide is so bad is that it lingers in the atmosphere for hundreds of years, and in some cases for more than 1,000, extracting gas through fracking, blasting very hot water, sand, and chemicals into subterranean rock to force oil or gas to the surface, also releases methane. Cleaner renewable energies such as wind and solar make up just 18% of U.S. energy, but that's up from less than 1% 20 years ago. And these sources are projected to hit 38% by 2050. Good for your health. When burning gas, and especially coal, conventional power plants spew particulate matter, aka soot, into the air. These tiny toxins easily enter our lungs and bloodstreams as we breathe, resulting in lung cancer, stroke, cognitive decline, and the premature deaths of more than 100,000 Americans a year, says Dr. Balbus. Researchers from Johns Hopkins found that Pennsylvania residents with the highest exposure to fracking were twice as likely as others to experience migraines, chronic sinus symptoms, and fatigue. Growing evidence suggests that fracking poses other serious health risks too. Renewable energy doesn't create these issues. The Climate Solution, adopting regenerative agriculture. After centuries of pollution, there is a lot of carbon in the atmosphere, and it needs to be removed to help slow rising temperatures. Using more natural farming practices, such as an approach known as regenerative agriculture, is a great way to safely store excess carbon in the ground. Good for the environment. High-quality living soil teems with colonies of fungi, bacteria, nematodes, and other tiny organisms. All these critters naturally remove carbon from the air and store it underground. But generations of conventional tillage and chemical-heavy farming have decimated their numbers. Growing food organically isn't enough, says Tim LaSalle, Ph.D., co-founder of the Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems at California State University, CHECO, because without regenerative practices, organic soil becomes depleted as well. That's why regenerative farmers employ techniques like planting extra soil-protecting crops, called cover crops, avoiding pesticides, herbicides, and insecticides, introducing an array of beneficial microbes to the ground, and not tilling the land. Good for your health. When farmers adopt the above practices, fewer pesticides and other toxic chemicals make their way from fields into drinking water. Plus, foods grown in healthier soil are probably better for us, LaSalle says, though more research is needed. Robust plant roots can stretch more than 50 times as far as those grown via conventional agriculture, he says. And that lets them discover and soak in additional trace minerals and other nutrients our bodies absorb when we eat them. I'll now be reading an article from Prevention's Pulse section entitled, Work From Home Workout. Sneaky ways to move while you work. Nobody on your Zoom call will know. Swap out your chair. Sitting on a stability ball forces you to sit up straight, which gives your core muscles a constant workout and helps improve posture. You can also gently bounce up and down throughout the day to burn a few extra calories. Keep equipment nearby. If you have room, consider a cardio-based contraption like the Prevention High Performance Under-Desk Exercise Bike and pedal away the day. Or keep light dumbbells, loop resistance bands, a Pilates ring, or a jump rope at your desk to do arm, leg, or butt exercises or light cardio between or during meetings. Do a few reps during breaks. Pauses throughout the day give your brain a rest, and if you work in front of a computer, give your eyes a break. Why not use this time to bust a few moves? Try air or wall squats, lunges, desk or floor push-ups, marching in place, planks, arm circles, or stretches to loosen your neck, hips, back, and shoulders, all areas that tense up with a lengthy sitting. Pedal while you work. Bike away the workday with high-performance under-desk exercise bike from the Prevention Fitness Collection. $149 at Amazon.com. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Adrian Booker with Prevention. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
West Campus Testing Site extends hours. Midland Health has received funding from the city that will allow extended hours for COVID-19 testing at Midland Memorial Hospital, West Campus. The testing site will operate 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays. Anyone who has been exposed or is symptomatic can call 68 Nurse 686-8773 to make an appointment at the drive-through testing site. The test is free for those who are scheduled. Insurance information will be collected from those who are insured, according to the release.
The Permian Basin is currently experiencing an unprecedented slowdown because of lower demand and an escalation in foreign production of oil. To keep current, we bring you the weekly Business and Oil Report. Each week, Recording Library volunteers and staff read the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American Business and Oil pages. Friday mornings at 6 and repeated Sunday nights at 7 and Thursdays at 4 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
Over 70, it might be time for a statin. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 71-year-old male in reasonably good health. At a recent routine checkup, my primary care physician suggested I consider taking Lipitor 10 milligrams. My total cholesterol is in the 150 to 160 milligram per deciliter range, although my LDL is slightly elevated and my HDL is slightly low and has been for many years. I have no heart disease or family history of heart disease, am not overweight, exercise regularly, and eat a healthy diet. The only reason my doctor gave me for recommending Lipitor was that I am over 70. He indicated it was up to me and gave me the impression that, if it were him, he would probably opt not to take it. Is the need to take a statin indicated just based on age? CL. Answer. Statin drugs reduce the risk of developing a heart attack. The amount of risk they reduce depends on a person's baseline risk, although elevated cholesterol levels and blood pressure are risk factors. Being 71 and male is your biggest risk factor. According to validated calculators, one is at cvriskcalculator.com. Your risk of having a heart attack or stroke in the next 10 years is about 19%. Treatment with a statin like atorvastatin, Lipitor, would be expected to reduce your risk by 3.5% to 4%. Over 10 years to about 15%. Guidelines would clearly recommend a statin drug such as Lipitor, and most would recommend a high dose, 40 milligrams or so, rather than the low dose your doctor has suggested. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's columns appear Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 65 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 50s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Hello, I am Allison Ramsey, and this is Health Magazine. Today, I'll begin reading from health.com. The first story is your COVID-19 vaccine card. What to do if you lose it, why you shouldn't laminate it, and other important info. This piece of paper could be your passport into the new normal, by Ashley Mateo, posted on April 13, 2021. As of now, more than 99 million Americans have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, which means they've been given a COVID-19 vaccine card. Besides confirming that you're fully or partially vaccinated, the card documents when you got the shot, where it happened, and the vaccine type you received, among other info. Your vaccine record card is almost as important as the shot itself. Besides letting others know what type of vaccine you had in case you suffer adverse effects, you'll likely need the card as proof of vaccination before getting on a plane, eating outdoors at a restaurant, returning to work or school, or venturing into other public spaces. Because it's so important, it's up to you to know how to keep it safe, what to do if you lose it, and whether or not you should be carrying it with you. Here's what health experts recommend. Don't get it laminated yet. Considering how crucial this card will be, it makes sense to think about protecting it with a permanent plastic shield. But doctors recommend holding off on that move. We are still not sure whether booster shots will be required, so having access to continue to write on them is important. Shudeh Shafi, MD, Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine at Brown University, tells Health. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, has said that people may also be asked to get a third dose of Pfizer or Moderna as opposed to a booster shot in the next 6 to 12 months, which would also be added to your vaccine card. So again, you'll want to make sure your healthcare provider has easy access to it. The lamination process can also mess with the pen or printer ink on the cards, potentially making it illegible. Dr. Shafi adds, for now, you can easily protect it in any of the vaccine card-sized sheet protectors that have been popping up online. Take a picture of it. Judging by social media, most people don't need to be told to photograph their vaccine card. But it's a one-of-a-kind document, so providers are stressing that people should take a quick, clear pic of it once they're fully vaccinated. Make sure to snap a photo of both the front and back of the card on your cell phone, advises Dr. Shafi. Then store the photo in your camera roll. Upload it to an easily accessible place like the Apple Cloud, Google Drive, or Dropbox, and even email it to yourself or a trusted emergency contact. That way, you have access to a digital copy of the card whenever it is needed, Dr. Shafi explains. The photo of the card might be proof enough for entering certain spaces, but more importantly, capturing the data on the card will be crucial if you ever need to report it lost. Don't post it on social media. It's tempting to share your hashtag justvaxxed selfie on social media. Even doctors do it. Many healthcare providers, such as myself, rush to do this in the early phases of the vaccination process to help promote the vaccine. Mohammed Musa, MD, an emergency medicine specialist and associate professor of medicine at the University of Toledo College of Medicine and Life Sciences, tells Health. But remember, your card contains a lot of personal info, such as your full name, date of birth, where you got your vaccine, and the date or dates you had it, all of which can be used for identity theft. As with posting anything online, you could be risking your personal identity and others stealing and modifying your immunization record for themselves, Dr. Musa explains. Think of it this way. Identity theft works like a puzzle made up of pieces of personal information. The Federal Trade Commission recently wrote, "You don't want to give identity thieves the pieces they need to finish the picture." Don't lose it, but if it goes missing, here's what to do. You want to keep your vaccine card safe because it's going to be a major pain to replace it if it goes MIA. But shit happens, and if you happen to lose your card, check back with the clinic, pharmacy, or hospital where you received the immunization, as they may have some form of record, says Dr. Musa. If that's not an option, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, recommends contacting your state health department's immunization information system. Your info should be added to that registry when you get vaccinated. The CDC also has a program called VSafe you can sign up for. This program is to track post-vaccine side effects and symptoms through a smartphone, explains Dr. Shafi. Register when you get your first vaccine, and the program will keep track of your vaccination information so that you can access it later should you lose your card. Store it in a safe place. Right now, there are no set guidelines on where you'll need to show your vaccine card, so you don't need to carry it on you at all times. Soon, though, it will likely become important to demonstrate proof of vaccination, says Musa, whether that's for entering office buildings, schools, and transportation services, or visiting resorts, venues, and amusement parks. New York State, for example, recently started allowing large-scale venues like sports areas to host a certain percentage of capacity as long as all attendees present a proof of negative COVID-19 test or completed COVID-19 vaccination before entry. The White House recently clarified that there will be no official federal vaccine passport, so states and businesses will likely be enacting these rules on their own. When you're not going somewhere that requires you to show the hard copy, keep your vaccine card somewhere safe. I keep mine with my passport, and keeping the card in a place where one stores things like deeds, social security cards, or birth certificates makes a lot of sense, says Dr. Shafi. The information in this story is accurate as of press time. However, as the situation surrounding COVID-19 continues to evolve, it's possible that some data have been changed since publication. While Health is trying to keep our stories as up-to-date as possible, we also encourage readers to stay informed on news and recommendations for their own communities by using the CDC, WHO, and their local public health departments as resources. That story was your COVID-19 vaccine card, what to do if you lose it, why you shouldn't laminate it, and other important info by Ashley Mateo, posted on April 13th, 2021. The next story is, what is cerebral venous sinus thrombosis? U.S. calls to pause Johnson & Johnson vaccine over blood clots. Six women out of 6.8 million people who have received the J&J vaccine experienced this rare type of blood clot, according to the CDC. By Karen Pallarito, posted on April 13, 2021. Federal health officials on Tuesday called for a pause in the use of Johnson & Johnson's, J&J's, one-dose COVID-19 vaccine following six reports of a rare type of blood clot known as cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, or CVST, in women who received the vaccine. One woman died and another has been hospitalized in critical condition, according to news reports. In a joint statement issued Tuesday, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, recommended a temporary standstill in vaccine administration out of an abundance of caution. All six cases were in women ages 18 to 48, and occurred in combination with low levels of blood platelets, a condition known as thrombocytopenia, the agencies noted. The FDA and CDC intend to further investigate these cases and assess their significance. The FDA Acting Commissioner, Janet Woodcock, MD, told reporters on Tuesday that such adverse effects appear to be extremely rare. Nevertheless, she stressed that COVID-19 vaccination safety is a top priority, and that the administration takes all such reports very seriously. In part, the pause is meant to ensure that healthcare providers are aware of the potential for this type of blood clot to occur. Again, as a precaution, The agencies want providers to be prepared to recognize, manage, and treat vaccine recipients who experience this adverse event. At this point, it's not known whether the J&J vaccine caused the clots. In a prepared statement, J&J noted that the government is reviewing data on 6 cases out of 6.8 million doses administered. The vaccine maker also noted that it is reviewing the cases with European health authorities and had decided to delay the vaccine rollout in Europe. If you recently had a J&J shot, here's what experts want you to know about this rare clotting complication. What is cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, or CVST? A CVST is not like the type of blood clot that blocks blood flow to the brain. This type of clot forms in the venous sinuses, which are spaces in the skull that allow blood to drain from the brain. FYI, they're not the same sinuses that fill with mucus when you get a cold. That's a separate drainage system. When a blood clot forms in the venous sinuses, it's like having a clog in your plumbing. This is basically preventing blood from draining out of the brain. Stacy Rose, MD, Assistant Professor of Internal Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Baylor College of Medicine, tells Health. And she says that congestion of blood in the brain is what leads to stroke, a very rare type of stroke affecting fewer than 5 in a million people every year, per Johns Hopkins Medicine. James Bussell, MD, Professor Emeritus of Pediatrics at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York City, who studies blood disorders, explains the chain of events this way. Your platelets, which are blood cells that help your blood to clot, somehow get activated. A clot forms in these large sinuses, and you end up with a low platelet count because you're using up platelets. That, in turn, can lead to bleeding, he tells Health. What are the CVST symptoms to watch out for? The FDA and CDC advise people who have received the J&J vaccine who develop severe headache, abdominal pain, leg pain, or shortness of breath within 3 weeks after getting their shot to contact their healthcare provider. Belly pain can be a sign that the person has developed clots in the abdomen, Dr. Bussell notes. In the 6 reported cases, symptoms appeared 6 to 13 days after vaccination. Clearly, we need to get a diagnosis as soon as possible in patients who are having these sort of symptoms, Dr. Rose observes. However, a common blood-thinning medication called heparin, often used to treat blood clots, may, in these instances, make the problem worse. Anthony Fauci, MD, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, pointed out during a White House press briefing on Tuesday. As Dr. Rose explains, it might be that if you've already had some sort of backup into the brain, you wouldn't want to give heparin, because then it's just going to sit in the blood in the brain and cause more damage. The takeaway: this shouldn't make you shy away from getting vaccinated. It's impossible to know at this moment why these adverse reactions occurred, especially because these events appear to be extremely rare. Literally less than 1 in a million, if you figure that only 6 women among 6.8 million people who have received the J&J experience CVST. Studies of CVST in general highlight certain risk factors. For whatever reason, women in the postpartum period are at higher risk, Dr. Rose points out. Perhaps that has something to do with hormones, she says. Whether this was the case for the 6 women who received the J&J vaccine is unknown, but the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists issued a statement on Tuesday advising their OBGYNs to steer their patients seeking COVID vaccination to one of the other two vaccines currently available. At this time, there is no clear phenotype of women who are more or less likely to experience this rare complication, ACOG noted. However, until there is a better understanding of the frequency and impact of this finding, it will be important to encourage pregnant and postpartum women who wish to be vaccinated to receive the mRNA vaccines, Pfizer or Moderna. Other factors, like having a clotting disorder or an autoimmune disorder like lupus, can also put people at risk for these blood clots, says Dr. Rose. But again, that's for CVST in general, and not necessarily linked to those six women who received the J&J vaccine. Overall, Arthur Kaplan, PhD, professor of bioethics at the New York University Grossman School of Medicine in New York City, says we don't collect good baseline information from regular people, aka those not in clinical trials, getting vaccines. So if an adverse reaction pops up, it can be hard to tell whether the vaccine caused it or if something else is going on. That's why the CDC and FDA both recommended a pause on administering the vaccine in order to investigate these cases. And for those people who are now questioning whether to get a COVID shot, Kaplan says, fear the virus, not the vaccine. Birth control pills, he notes, are much more likely to cause blood clots than COVID vaccines, albeit a different type of blood clot. Meantime, thousands of Americans are dying or being hospitalized every day with COVID-19. You don't want to be talking about remote, tiny risks from vaccines at graveyards, he says. The information in the story is accurate as of press time. However, as the situation surrounding COVID-19 continues to evolve, it's possible that some data have changed since publication. While Health is trying to keep our stories as up-to-date as possible, we also encourage readers to stay informed on news and recommendations for their own communities by using the CDC, WHO, and their local public health departments as resources. That story was, what is cerebral venous sinus thrombosis? U.S. calls to pause Johnson & Johnson vaccine over blood clots, by Karen Pallarito, posted on April 13, 2021. The next story is 5 doctor appointments to stop postponing now that the COVID pandemic is easing. Yes, it's safe to go for checkups again. These are the most important ones to get on your calendar, by Claire Gillespie, posted on April 9, 2021. For more than a year, COVID-19 has largely confined people to their homes and shut down schools, stores, and businesses. The pandemic isn't over, of course, but thanks to the vaccine, normal life is starting to gradually return, and doctors' offices that were closed or offered only limited services for the past year are opening back up. You're not alone if you've skipped your regular checkups this past year. According to a survey of 1,093 Americans from Time Harris Poll, 78% have put off at least one medical service during the past 3 months, 30% have skipped their dental exam, and 27% missed their annual checkup. Even those who make their health a priority have let things slide. In a recent survey by Meredith, the parent company of Health, less than half of women who identify as health enthusiasts reported keeping on top of their doctor's appointments. If you haven't seen your doctors in over a year, except for COVID-related issues, it's time to get them on your calendar. These are the doctor appointments that are most important, according to physicians. If you're concerned about the safety of going to your doctor's office, contact the office to ask what precautions they're taking, Richard Seidman, MD, MPH, Chief Medical Officer at LA Care Health Plan tells Health. OBGYN Checkup. Your OBGYN checkup is your opportunity to talk about birth control, be tested for sexually transmitted infections, have a pelvic exam. When your doctor uses the speculum to examine parts of your reproductive system and address any changes to your cycle. It's also where you can get important cancer screenings, such as a clinical breast exam and a Pap test if you need it. The guidelines for Pap tests are based on age and if your last Pap came back normal. Your doctor should be keeping track as to when you're due for one. Though the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, ACOG, doesn't indicate that women with no symptoms need to have a yearly pelvic exam, many OBGYNs feel a yearly checkup is crucial. There are medical conditions where symptoms may be subtle or not obvious, such as certain STIs, like chlamydia, urinary tract and bacterial infections, and ovarian cysts, which can be diagnosed via a pelvic exam. Cherry Ross, MD, OBGYN at Providence St. John's Health Center in Santa Monica, California, tells Health. Because your OBGYN addresses sexual health, it's also a time for you to open up about other intimate mental or physical health issues. Meeting with your OBGYN yearly gives you the opportunity to discuss topics such as family planning, sexual dysfunction, depression or anxiety, domestic violence, and other social issues, Dr. Ross adds. Mammogram, breast cancer screening. When you're at the OBGYN or primary care physician, ask your doctor about a referral to a radiology center for a mammogram. The guidelines concerning how often women should get this breast cancer screening varies. The American Cancer Society suggests that average risk women, meaning you don't have certain risk factors for the disease, like a family history or genetic mutation, start getting them yearly between ages 45 and 54, then switch to every 1 to 2 years after age 55. ACOG recommends women start having mammograms every 1 to 2 years between ages 50 and 74. Your OBGYN can let you know how often you should go for a mammogram and if you should get one in 2021. The bottom line is that despite the pandemic, breast cancer has not taken a vacation. Richard Reitherman, MD, PhD, Medical Director of Breast Imaging at Medical Care Breast Center at Orange Coast Medical Center in Fountain Valley, California, tells Health. Mammograms do save lives, and the next life it saves may very well be your own. Primary Care Physician Visit. A routine physical examination helps you stay in good health by addressing a wide range of topics. Usually, preventative care is at the top of the list. Amy Mullins, MD, Medical Director for Quality and Science at the American Academy of Family Physicians, tells Health. What happens during your annual physical varies depending on your personal and family health history, and your age can also play a factor in what types of conversations your doctor has with you. Depending on your age, your physician may discuss the need for a mammogram, colonoscopy, or immunizations, Dr. Mullins says. Taking your vitals like heart rate and blood pressure, as well as doing a blood panel to check cholesterol, blood sugar, and blood cell issues, could also be part of the physical. These visits are also a good time for you to bring up any health concerns you might have, including any change with your physical or mental health in the last year, says Dr. Mullins. As we continue to move through and out of the COVID-19 pandemic, wellness and wellness visits are important and a great time to touch base and make sure staying well remains a priority, she adds. Dental check teeth cleaning. To maintain good oral hygiene and a healthy mouth, you need to visit your dentist regularly. Boca Raton, Florida cosmetic and restorative dentist Jeffrey R. Morris, D. DMD tells health. So if you haven't been in at least a year, it might be time. How often to come in for a cleaning and the exam and x-rays that may come with it should be determined by your dentist and based on your individual needs, according to Ruchi Saholta, DDS, spokesperson for the American Dental Association. While many people can get routine cleanings completed twice a year in order to maintain healthy gums and periodontal, tooth bone, health, some people need routine cleanings 3 or 4 times a year, she tells Health. Regular checkups and early detection can have a big impact. For example, there could be the difference between getting a small cavity filled or needing a crown or root canal. These checkups detect any issues, such as cavities and gum disease, early enough that they may be corrected with minimal treatment and cost, says Dr. Morris. During an annual visit, your dentist may take a series of x-rays to look at what's going on inside your teeth and the bones that support them, and measures pocket depths around the teeth to determine if gum disease is present. That's all the time we have with this story titled, 5 Doctor Appointments to Stop Postponing Now That the COVID Pandemic is Easing, by Claire Gillespie, posted on April 9, 2021. That concludes today's readings of Health Magazine. This has been Allison Ramsey for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center's Psychiatry Department will host free virtual monthly webinars covering multiple mental and behavioral health concerns. Each month, the public can join in through Zoom and listen to TTUHSC physicians and residents speak on topics ranging from depression, autism in children, PTSD, eating disorders, and much more. The public can find more information on TTUHSC Permian Basin's Facebook page or by emailing pb-psychadmin at ttuhsc.edu.
Saturday mornings, we bring you a variety of exciting publications and shows, beginning at 9 with Armed Forces News on Military Times, at 10 a.m. Sports Illustrated, at 11 o'clock, The Outdoor Show with readings from outdoor magazines, and at 12 noon, The Blind Handyman. Saturdays on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. MMR vaccine is critical. Dear Dr. Roach, we have friends who got the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, believing it will help with exposure to COVID-19. What are your thoughts on their thinking? PH. Answer. The World Health Organization has reported an increase in measles deaths since 2016, and that trend has accelerated in the past year. The COVID-19 pandemic certainly is having an effect on measles vaccination, and with a drop in vaccination comes a loss of herd immunity, meaning that a measles epidemic could spread in the population. Mumps and rubella are important too, but measles is incredibly infectious, far more so than COVID-19, and it is fatal in perhaps one case in 1,000. At a global level, getting children immunized against measles remains critical. A study published in November 2020 showed that people with high antibody titers to mumps had less severe COVID-19 symptoms than those who had low antibody titers. It's possible that people with generally strong immune systems, as evidenced by high titers to mumps,
will have better outcomes if infected by COVID-19, rather than it being a specific effect of mumps antibodies. The authors of the paper do not currently recommend booster shots for MMR. At the time of this writing, several COVID-19 vaccines have been